the actual propaganda that was being promoted to start the Iraq War. And if you can actually look up an old interview, you might be able to find it if you search it. But Bill Maher interviewed the former president of the Council on Foreign Relations. I think his last name is Haas, H-A-A-S. I forget his first name. And when, as soon as he came on, Bill Maher said to him, "He said, okay, well, we hear that you are actually you're actually part of the organization who secretly runs the entire world, right?" And so Haas actually he puts on this very, you know, big smile, smirk, ear to ear, and then he shakes his head, yeah. Yeah, you know, like, yes, yeah. And I was like, whoa, you know, and so, and of course, people in the audience were like, "Oh, he's joking," you know, but I think you're serious, you know. It's like, that's how powerful they are, or they believe they are, that they can come forward and say those type of things. But at any rate, the whole point is that, I mean, it really is strange to me that African nations decided that they were not going to conform to the demands by Western governments to accept LGBTQ lifestyle and normalization. And what happens? The IMF says, okay, you guys are not going to get any more loans. Mm. Whoa, you're a bank. What are you doing interfering into people's culture, their sovereign, you know, sovereign governments, et cetera, right? So the fundamental point, again, being that these are, again, one of the ways I would say that when we're looking to try to look for those corporations or those people who actually we can see as potential helpers of the Masih al-Dajjal, that then go no further than the banks, the transnational think tanks, right, which are out there. United Nations, the World Economic Forum, Council on Foreign Relations, and similar corporations like that. You know, I personally believe that these are the true helpers, which fundamentally, again, takes us to the question of, okay, is there actually a cabal? Right. You know, so
what does cabal mean for those who might not know?
Well, cabal, we're talking about a sort of secret group of people who actually, you know, who conspire to dictate the direction of everyone else on the planet. Right. I guess that's one way to put it. Right. Yeah. So this is typically like why people, they don't like to hear this type of talk, because we've been programmed, I would say, we've been primed to have an aversion to conspiratorial talk. Right. Right. I remember years ago whenever I first started to meet people from the UK, I noticed that people from the UK were much more, in particular Muslims from the UK, were much more inclined towards accepting conspiracy theories.
Oh, yes, big time. Yeah, it's funny, it's the opposite. Most of the general population, non-Muslim population, have accepted the idea, oh, there are no conspiracies at all. Any talk of conspiracies is paranoid, which of course is absurd, because in real life, conspiracies, of course, do happen. We know this, they're a fact. Right. But Muslims are the opposite. They tend to, the default position seems to be, in the UK anyway, conspiracy.
Yeah. In the UK it is. In the US it's different. And in Canada, I think it's different. It's the opposite. You know, and I think, and that's a problem, an Achilles heel of our community. Because whether or not the conspiracy theory is 100% true, we should not dismiss a theory simply because, you know, we don't like the way it hears. We don't like the way it sounds, right? We shouldn't dismiss it simply because, okay, it originates from certain people, or because it sounds like a conspiracy theory. You know what I mean? If you're a truth seeker, right, you're willing to entertain every possibility, right? Now, I may not be able to prove or sort of establish a clear line of causation, I guess you'd say, between this thing and the other thing. Right.
Of course, the attack on Iraq, the reason given for that, and how all the intelligence agencies and the government, everyone just knew there were WMDs. And that was a kind of a conspiracy, because it was based on nothing. So it had to be actively cultured and manufactured and promoted in the media very energetically to alarm everyone, such that, we must attack Iraq, a Freudian slip there, yeah.
Right, that still might happen, Alano's best, you know, but they've been trying that, you know, but and that's, you know, again, the being sort of primed and conditioned to to accept those type of things. And they take advantage of our frailties, right? You know, of our fears, our anger, you know, our desires, our anxieties. They take advantage of those things, right? You know, so in every time we get afraid, you know, of course we're willing to, okay, we're going to surrender a certain amount of freedom over to them, right? And they'll continue to take, and they never give it back. We have to be very careful about that. And right. So again, you have, I would say that when it comes to those people who we should really be keeping our eyes on with respect to support for the establishment of this system of slavery, we need to keep our eyes on the banks, need to keep our eyes on the think tanks, need to keep our eyes on the major corporations, right? So for the banks, the central bank of all central banks is the BIS, or the Bank of International Settlements. And you have the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, Federal Reserve Bank in the U.S. You know, the standing orders of everyone else in society start with the banks. That's where it begins. We understand the banks. I think you can understand everything else that's happening in the world, right? Not down to every single detail, because their power is not absolute, right? It's not absolute power, right? But, you know, but it's a lot of what we see, rather, it starts with the banks. And again, the banks at the top have already made this, the central banks have already made the decision for everyone that this is the direction that we're going, that in the future, we're going to have programmable money. We're going to have money where we're going to be able to, we're going to know everything that you buy, everything that you sell, right? We're going to have access. There's not going to be as much privacy, or at least that's what it appears. You know, it gives, it opens up the capacity to do that, you know, to be much more intrusive on people's lives, and they can actually turn off your money, like, and this will happen once cash is actually phased out. Like a couple weeks ago, I believe it was one of the heads of the EO. I forget this woman, I forget her name. She came out and made an announcement about how the European Union Central Bank digital currency is on the move, right? And she also said after that, you know, cash is here to stay. Now, I think her saying that is important in that there are a lot of people who are very skeptical about the intentions of these people. Said, why would we want to phase out cash? You know, because if you phase out cash and all my cash is all digital, you know, then I won't be able to eat, or you could decide that I can't eat. So the cash is here to stay. We have to say that now, but eventually they're probably going to phase out cash. At least this is the fear, unless we're able to pass legislation that ensures that people are able to maintain their privacy. And then there's a way to ensure that particular rule or law is enforced, right? Because I think you can't stop the technology. The technology is here, right? It's here and it's happening, right? But again, another way that the Dajjalic system can actually enslave the rest of us. So we were talking about like just debt and credit debt, right? Just by itself. We saw what they did to the truckers in Canada during the COVID lockdowns, the trucker revolt, right? What did they do? They shut down their money. Now, and that's even without having a CBDC or a central bank digital currency, right? You know, but they were able to do it. They can do it now, but they are just targeted, you know, so everybody's like, hey, well, it's not me, you know, so who cares, right? But once, you know, everyone is in a situation, that precarious situation, what happens then? What will they impose upon us? What will they demand of us? And then tell us that if you don't conform, you want to be locked out of society, you know? So, and then again, we get the United Nations, Council of Foreign Relations. We saw what happened with the WHO, the World Health Organization, during COVID, you know, and how they colluded with people, well-established people. BlackRock, for instance, when it comes to transnational corporations who invest a lot in these big companies like BlackRock, Vanguard as well, they have massive budgets. You know, much more than, they're like a country by themselves, right? $10 trillion, $11 trillion budget, and they choose different projects to invest in. Now, it doesn't mean that they have absolute control over companies. They say, for instance, if we come back to Bud Light or like Target, that example, They may have, let's say Vanguard or BlackRock has 17% ownership in those companies, right? Let's say they have 17% ownership. Okay, there's still 83% owned by other people. Mm-hmm. But we have to understand, too, is that if another company only owns 1% of Target or Bud Light, and Vanguard owns 17%, then Vanguard has much more leverage than the companies that own 1 or 2%. Mm-hmm. In other words, so if BlackRock steps in and says, hey, you have to sell these androgynous toys to these kids. You have to sell this clothing, right, which obscures gender to these children. Now, you have to do an ad with an individual, you know, who is of, you know, who claims that he's a woman when we actually know he's not a woman, right? Or you have to hire this individual who's not even qualified to even hold that position, you know, simply because of their color or because of their gender. That BlackRock or all the other companies, they have massive control, massive power, right? Massive control. So in other words, it's almost as if like you have to pity the corporations a little bit because, you know, they themselves are trying to survive, but at the same time, they don't need that much money, right? They don't have to compromise. They don't have to compromise, you know, but you're also talking about companies who employ a lot of other people, right? Who pay taxes and also they provide for their families. So it's not easy to get out of that, that type of dilemma. There was an operation called Operation Mockingbird, which was a CIA operation, which apparently started after World War II. When the Cold War with Russia or the Soviet Union had begun, and the fundamental goal was for them to manipulate the American public into believing pretty much whatever they want to. In other words, their plan was to take over the media, educational system, educational institutions, and things like that in order to sort of get Americans to believe whatever they wanted, so in order for them to go along with everything that they wanted. It was exposed, and they had hearings about it in the 60s. It's not something known that much in public, but I personally believe that this operation has expanded, and perhaps all media outlets, which are legacy media outlets, actually are controlled by like the federal government.
On that point, I mentioned just briefly early on about the alternative media, and one of the most remarkable things, I don't know what you think, recently, the recent year or so, is Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. It used to be Twitter, it's now X, of course.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There seems to be an extraordinary blossoming of free speech. Now, not all of this speech, communications, tweets, are pleasant, or posts, I think you call them now.
Right.
But nevertheless, it opened up this incredible space where freedom of thought and freedom of expression and seemingly unauthorized and unapproved of ideas are now given open expression online in instantly accessible ways globally. I mean, do you think this is a very positive thing? Is this now an alternative media that where we can actually get our real news from, so we're not so dependent on the so-called legacy media?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. I think Elon is a hero. I don't know what things may look like in the future, you know, if he may change or they may find a way to wrestle X away from him, you know.
Yeah.
But I do think it was a very brave thing for him to do. And I personally believe that had he not done that, we wouldn't see this level of outrage about what's happening with the Palestinians. But basically, Elon seemed to have shifted a bit, right? You know, so I remember there was a world government forum that was held somewhere, and they invited him to speak. And so when he actually went to speak, he told them that, well, I actually think this whole idea of world government is probably not a good thing. He says, you know, because when we look historically, there have always been countervailing civilizations, right? He talked about the Ottomans against the Roman Empire, and he brought up these things, and so he's speaking to these globalists, and he says this to them. His ESG score actually was lowered, you know, as a result of some of his positions, right?
I noticed how he took a big hit, didn't he, in the last year, advertising wise, because of was it ADL in America. Yeah. The Anti-Defamation League, which obviously a pro-Zionist, very militant group, basically campaigned to stop companies advertising or be labeled anti-Semitic. It's an extraordinary thing that I didn't realize it had such a huge impact, this campaign to disinvest or not advertise with Twitter, X, and had a big impact. And he's actually started to, there's an Irish guy, Keith Woods, I think. He's not that well known, but he's becoming more popular. He actually liked or retweeted something he said. You can look up Keith Woods and see who he is. Mm-hmm. He ain't mainstream, that's for sure. Very critical of ADL himself and has exposed a lot of their activities behind the scenes. So, yeah, he seems to move from this kind of globalist position to some very alternative, almost risky positions, seemingly. But a very interesting evolution in his personality, his positioning vis-a-vis the issues, I think.